up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Well, North Bay Station Jackson. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 750. NASDAQ Futures down a buck, Chuck. Not much going on this morning. We have the, a couple stocks are moving. We've got Microsoft up 461. We have, that's about the only one. United Health up 239. United Health's had a big bounce back since Warren Buffett was in there. Let me check that. I mean, it's a huge jump, because this thing was, nobody wanted any part of this thing until, I guess, he said he was going to take a piece of it, and it's up. Where are we up here? We're up, we reached a low on 731, which wasn't that long ago, 249, now it's 356, so that's a jump. If you'd have bought some stock right there, I'm sure Kevin was in. Did you buy any at 249, Kevin, United Health?
I'm negotiating with Buffett for him to take a financial interest in me.
Wasn't that why when you were in the hospital, when you saw your bill, you went and bought some?
Yeah, that was Corwell. Sorry.
Oh, well, how do you know? United Health might have been involved in there somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever told you. I was back there last week.
Just to say hi?
No. No, now I have blood clots. You know, I'm playing health whack-a-mole.
Well, at some point you need the midlife tune-up.
That may happen. You know, we'll, I could wind up at Mayo or Cleveland Clinic pretty soon, so we'll see.
Let's hope not. Who would I fight with?
Well, no, I'm kind of up for it because I have these independent, you know, but seemingly independent health issues. But when they keep going boom, boom, boom in a row, I probably need a good once-over at some point.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure that's not the sign of getting a tad older. Of course, you can't go too far.
Yeah, but we could spread this out over a few years.
I know.
That would could. Be nice instead of a few months.
Well, maybe you'll get it all fixed now.
Somebody probably... shove a road over my butt and I'll be fine.
Oh, God. Well, I think once something moves a little bit, it's sort of like if you got a sore toe and you try to run, guess what? You wreck your knee, right? I mean, it's just...
Well, that, you know, Tom, that's true. I was thinking of that. That's sort of like a football player. The first injury, maybe not so bad. The second injury, yeah. But, you know, once you start piling them on in a sport that physical and that violent, you tend to start just breaking down.
Well, that's a sport, and you know, I used to play a lot of stuff competitively, and that's why I think, like, no matter how hard, not true because some people really have the gene for it. No matter how hard you kind of work out individually, it's not the same as playing handball or basketball against somebody else, because you have to match them, not you. There's a big difference, right? I mean, it's one thing for me to go in there and hit the handball around a little bit. It's quite another for a guy to fire one in the corner and make me go get it.
Yes, it is.
What do you make of all kinds of numbers flying around, all kinds of stocks, some stocks flying up? We've had the discussion, and I was actually on Joel's show yesterday, and, of course, what does Joel ask me? What do you make about the market these days? I try not to make predictions, Kevin, because guess what? I'm not good at them. I mean, this stock going up, that would go down. I mean, I don't know that anybody necessarily is, unless you have some information before, and even then, you don't know what the market's going to read on it. All I try and do for everybody is toss out all the variables and say these are the things that might affect stuff, and this is what seems to have changed, and this one isn't. And you sort of all got to piece it all together. I'm really having trouble. I don't like the direction the economy is sort of going in terms of. It's not even like preferred people. I'm not blaming this administration because it's kind of been happening for a while, as you've pointed out a few times. But the idea of the favored industries, and it's not. You know, I poke fun at, you know, Zuckerberg showing up and, you know, and handing Trump a valise. Well, that's sort of happening, and to me it looks horrible. But it doesn't really matter. It's happened already in terms of just money power. I mean, I went through. Why do I do this stupid stuff, Kevin? I looked at the money, the value that Larry Ellison made the other day when the Oracle was up $100. The guy's got, what's he got, 1.1 million shares. He's still a billion. He still owns, you know, half the place or a core 40% of the place. That's $100 billion. Now, to you and me, you sit there and go, I don't even know what the hell that number means, really. Then I start to, you and I have had how many discussions, and with, not so much with Carl, but with Lou, oh my God, how could the Bears be worth $8 billion in somebody's mind when they only make $200 million? I mean, what manner of moron would do that unless you have some sort of a view of the future? And yet, if you look at what the guy was up in one day, we're talking about somebody with the power to buy probably every news outlet in this country, and some of these guys already have.
And they're not for sale. They're already bought by the pharma companies, but keep going.
Okay, but, well, the advertising is, but
That is as good as bought.
Okay, well, you're going down sort of the same road, but in point, the dude could buy what's left of the Tribune. He could buy, you know, whatever, the Post is already Zuckerberg. It's money that, and he could buy, well, I'll lay one close to home. He could buy 3/4 of the NFL teams with the money he made that day.
Yeah.
And it's power of the extent that nobody has ever even dreamed of. Okay? And it's...
Well, it is an interesting phenomenon. It's one thing for a company itself to just run up, but when he owns such a big piece of the company, that means his personal wealth is, and that's, you know, that's the part that I think makes it hard to fathom. You know, we'd have our eyebrows raised over Oracle's running, but yeah, when it turns into, you know, what happened, and he actually surpassed Musk for a little while during that day, then fell back as the richest man in the world. You know, and we've seen the same thing. We've seen the same thing with Bezos. We've seen the same thing with, oh my gosh, there's got to be somebody else on that list. You know, certainly Microsoft to an extent, although I think he's personally divested a lot of stuff into his foundation, which means, you know how foundations work, as we saw with the Clintons. It's just another way to support your lifestyle. And you're just taking it off your books.
I don't know if he needs much help. Well, Ellison, what's his salary? $200,000 a year? Really? He must be getting it from someplace.
Yeah. So you have all that. And we can pull, I mean, Hal's online, so Hal, you should feel free to jump in. And Carl always comes online early on Fridays, and I'm always happy if Carl chimes in as well. But it is the personal wealth, but it is also these gigantic reactions, these outsized reactions that don't seem to make any sense. That if you look at typically, and think of the market as a system. Systems, you know, systems sort of have trends, and they have variance, and they have all kinds of things. We're just seeing these huge variance swings. If we wanted to calculate, you know, the standard deviation of the swing, this one's going to be way off the charts. And we have a lot of this. And I think, you know, I can relate this back to, you know, the stuff, the world where I live, which is a lot of quality management stuff, and that is there's a phenomenon with systems called tampering. And all tampering means is that you have all these, you could call them externalities, you could call them outside influences, whatever you want to call them, that come in and they change the normal growth rates, the normal variations, and they make them outsized. And the problem with tampering is it tends to swing one way, and we all say, wow, look at how that ran up. They also have a tendency to swing the other way and say, wow, look at how that crashed.
Well, you look, where are these numbers? And help, please, you can chime in if I ask this question. When you look at the situation, Oracle has been around like a long time. They were one of the people that crashed in 2000. And we got away, by the way, we used to have a client, I won't say his name, that was pretty high up the chain in Oracle, right? And he wasn't like VP or anything. Well, he might have been a VP, but he wasn't like his second man or anything. So my brother Dan asked him, what do you think of Ellison? And guess what the answer was?
What's that?
The only difference between Ellison and God is God doesn't think he's Ellison.
Chief, if you look at what the Oracle thing was, okay, I mean, that was a double miss, okay, in earnings. And then Ellison comes out and says, it makes a prediction on the revenue from their AI/cloud stuff, that if I read the numbers correctly and heard the prediction correctly, is going to triple the revenue of the company.
Well, that's where I was going with this. And this
if you happen to
deal with NVIDIA as well.
But the bottom line, the reason the stock went up 25%, okay, is because Ellison essentially did what all these IPO companies did in 1997 and 1998, all right? The difference is Oracle is not a startup with no customers and no revenue. It's a company that's been around for God knows how long. And by the way, is a $50 billion a year revenue firm, all right? But he came out and now how you get away with doing that, with making that kind of a statement without people immediately calling you a chucklehead, and instead the market your stock's price skyrockets on this statement, it tells us exactly how far into Looney Tunes land we are.
Well, maybe that
didn't Musk say something like that a few years ago, and he got investigated for.
He was going to buy his
stock back, and then he didn't. That was one of the reasons he got invested.
Well, he did even worse just within the last month or so. Okay, and I actually have an article in the queue that says, when do people call BS on this carnival barker? And the reason is, of course, Elon's done this multiple times, and none of the predictions have actually.
He's actually been cited by the SEC a couple times.
Well, yeah. And he's never. But the thing is, he's done this several times. He's never been right. All right. Now, here's the one that he made is that Tesla is a $1 trillion company because of Optimus robots. That's the latest one.
Well, I'll let Hal here talk for a second, but if you look at just the numbers, all right, and we're all kind of saying the same thing. The companies made their revenue this year was up 12.7%. And on a year that the four of us have argued was basically a zero growth year, or maybe a 1% or 2%, that's pretty friggin' good, right? I mean, that's really good. Now, next year, what was the prediction going to be? It was going to be like 16 or 17, but the one that dropped everybody's jaw was 2027, wasn't they're going to be up like 40 or 50%, right, from today?
Basically, what he said was that it was going to put $100 billion on the revenue of the firm.
It was going to double by 30. But
the idea that he's going to go from a $50 billion year company to a $150 billion year company within the next few years.
His
company might not even be around in a few years because there's a lot of turnover, and we don't know where these companies are. I mean, technology could shift, and he could be on. He could be. He could Rockefeller himself. Rockefeller failed to see the coming disruption in. He was focused on kerosene. He didn't view cars. He kept thinking cars were like the toys of the rich.
Gasoline
thing, right? So that could happen to Ellison at Oracle.
Well, and then Henry Ford destroyed him, and he wasn't trying to, but that's what happened, right?
Yeah, because he made the car available to everybody, right?
That's right.
Standard Oil did pretty well. He wasn't exactly destroyed.
Well, no, but in terms of market share, right? He didn't see the gasoline revolution.
Right. He didn't see it coming, and he wasn't positioned for it. But here's the thing, though, that gets me about this is that when you look at the data from the people that actually look at the companies that have started attempting to integrate AI into their workflows. And there are a handful of studies that have been done now at this point and have actually come out with results, okay? Essentially all of them have spent a huge ton of money and have gotten zero accretion on their bottom line. Now,
I think they're able to not hire as many young people as they used to, because I think you have experienced people using AI in a way where that one experienced person that's good with AI, maybe even coding, is able to do the work of like 8 fresh college students.
Hal, I will tell you right now, having seen the integrated AI, so-called integrated development environments, which I've been forced.
I'm not saying it's working great. I'm just saying.
This stuff has been out there in one form or another, and yes, it gets quote unquote better.
Yeah.
Anybody that believes that it is ever going to do anything other than displace all the India level people from a standpoint of coding has rocks in their head.
Well, yeah. Consider this a little.
I think it is having a slowing effect on hiring in computer science, because my brother-in-law just graduated from Columbia, and he, like a lot of people with a computer science degree, who we all told to go out there and learn how to code, him and his cohort are having a hard time finding work.
Let me turn this just a hair. Instead of trying to figure out why the numbers could be wrong, let's think for a second about how they could be right. The two guys
were on numbers. The inflation.
Well, I mean, just no. Look at me. Look at the Oracle situation. Let me finish.
Stock price. That stock price is, and a lot of stock prices are inflated because of the money that's being created, and most money is created through bank lending.
Okay, but
deposit expansion.
When I judge you dudes and myself, you can't always look at stuff through your own eyeballs, because all this stuff seems that's why we're kind of the conversation is we're trying to take in like all the variables. And there's no question that Carl and you, Hal, are absolutely correct that this AI is not going to be as good as something else. But guess what?
Let me finish, but if
I let Commonwealth Edison be the only electronic provider in the country, which they're not there yet, Commonwealth Edison doesn't give a rat's ass whether the person I talk to is some AI robot and I can't make head or tail out of him, or I don't. There's no competition there. There's nobody to take the other side. The more powerful people get, the more they can make the product more horrible for you and me, and they get away with it.
Yeah, because the customer has no alternative, right?
And so. The two dudes around yesterday, Wayne and Andrew, and I love those guys. Wayne had brought up something interesting, and again, we've talked all individually, the four of us, or me with each of you. What is this movement towards more government control, if there is such a thing? And again, I'm not just pinning it on this administration. It's been kind of coming for a while. What are the fruits of that? And Wayne said yesterday that Ellison's kid and Trump's kid are like two peas in a pod. And if the government moves forward with all this, face technology and everybody on camera, and the place, it's not even AI. The single best or most situated company to do well with that is Oracle, because that's what they do. It's big, massive amounts of stuff that you can get your way through.
What percent of their business is probably government, do you think?
I that's what I was going to ask you guys. But, that's a thought that I hadn't heard from. You can't just assume that the market is totally stupid with the stock up $100. My first reaction was, the market's pretty stupid. It's up $100. But maybe it's not, is my point. Is there a reason that maybe, as big as these guys are, they could double to 2030? And Wayne, his reaction was, well, as tight as they're getting with government, it could actually happen.
Yeah.
Now, that's it. That was his.
About their government contract.
I don't either, but.
I don't either, but I will tell you this. Oracle, I'm very familiar with the company all the way back to when I was running my place, all right, because they were in I mean, they were one of the first movers in the database space. I mean, they're the commercialization of it.
Well, that's what they did. They could
business in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's their that has been their core business, you know, forever. Okay. Now, I never liked their answer to the problem because of the way they licensed their products and the cost that that ended up imposing on people, and the fact that they had made proprietary changes to the SQL standard that essentially did what Amazon did with AWS years later in the cloud space, and that if you used any of those things, and then you know, they turn around and they say, oh, by the way, next year your license for the database is going to go 25%. But you say, well, Bill, F you, right? I'm going to move over to, you know, Joe's database. No, you're not, because you integrated all of this stuff that's proprietary and Joe doesn't got it.
Yeah. Go ahead and undo your reliance on us. Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, go ahead and try that, right? And you know, have
well, it sounds like most consumer products, right? If you need Amazon, if you stop paying your Amazon Prime membership, you lose all those movies that you purchased.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you know,
on a consumer level, there's a lot of business models where, like, Apple consumers, people that like iPhones, whatnot, they're kind of locked in.
But hell, you got to watch a football game last night if you had Prime.
Well, you know, yeah, and you got screwed in the process. But, you know, the thing, one of the reasons that I never used any of their stuff in my operation was because that was part and parcel of how they structured their business. And they did, and it was very intentional. And a lot of firms do it. You know, I mean, I'm not just picking on them. I mean, good God, look at Microsoft, look at Apple, look at everybody else, right? But that scares me as a business person to a great deal. I mean, CRM, you know, Salesforce has done the same sort of thing. You know, they did very well with it for quite a period of time. How are they doing right now? You know, I mean, their recent high was 369. They're trading 245 right now. Excuse me, that didn't work out so good, right? So, I mean, the comeuppance has this nasty way of coming when you do that. And AWS was the going to be the only cloud, all right? And they put a bunch of that stuff in their infrastructure. You know, they're not the only cloud, are they? You could use Azure now. You could use DigitalOcean. You could use a 36 smaller guys.
And got any number of smaller private cloud, smaller companies' cloud services. So yeah,
well, there's some like companies. There's some companies in Utah. There's some companies in Utah that I've talked to that have developed their own database management systems that are specific to their operations.
Well, here's the other thing too, Hal, is that there is an open source that is SQL compliant system called Postgres, okay, which I built the customer backend around on my, you know, at my company in the 1990s. Okay, I still use it today.
Wow,
and it is
Access is still pretty good. You know?
Well, and you know what? It has grown up in many
Access
ways.
Access looks like an old minivan. Looks like my own minivan, but it works pretty good.
Well, you know, Postgres is not an old minivan. Postgres is a pretty. The forum, my blog, and my forum. That's the data backend for it.
It's a restored '67 Chevy. A Corvette.
Restored with a big 454 in it.
By the way, guys, they're still looking for
something
the
You know, for small companies, even something like MySQL will tend to work for them.
SQL Lite. I train students on SQL with SQL Lite. It works great.
Well, MySQL has always had, they fixed a lot of the issues that it had originally with it originally did not support transactions, which is a really serious problem for a database. Postgres always has, and that's one of the reasons that I chose it when I did the development for the back end at MCS. But that now, I mean, you know, my entire blog and forum, that is the back end data storage for it, is Postgres.
So we should probably take about 20 seconds, take off our propeller hats, and ungeek the conversation a little bit, because we probably have some listeners going, what are they talking about?
What is this? Yeah.
There is an open interface standard for databases that uses a query language called SQL, which we refer to as SQL, and there's standards for how you write queries to databases, and you can embed them in your code, and you can just use them standalone as well as if you want to. And so that's what we're really talking about, is to what extent do some of these database providers, like an Oracle, like a Microsoft, to what extent do they violate that open standard to make their stuff a little more proprietary and a little harder to get away from it once you enroll, or how open is it actually? And so there's lots of databases that meet that standard, but the two big dogs in there for the large companies are Microsoft and Oracle, and they charge a whole lot of money, and they make a whole lot of money on that baseline business.
Well, that's kind of where I started out the conversation, Kevin, is what, when you look at some of these valuations, and we've all talked about, is Microsoft, hey, they're pretty friggin' big to have a 13 or 14 times revenue share price. You know, Palantir, I don't even want to go into it. I mean, it's the stock's 170 or something. Their revenue per share is a buck and a half. But when you have clients like I do, and they own these stocks, you look for reasons why, hey, we better protect this because this thing's pretty friggin' high. Or you might actually say, you know, is there something special about these stocks? What's the new variable? Is it government? Are there going to be, when I look at my screen 5 years from now, are going to be 15 stocks that aren't here, okay, that now are incorporated.
I'll tell you where the challenge I have right now is that, you know, of course, everyone, you know, you look at the MTS, okay, which just came out for this last month, all right, and then you look at the CPI report that we just got, all right, and the PPI report. The impulse that the PPI has put into the system is already there. The core inflation reaction to that, the flow through from that several months worth of PPI is now showing up in core. It's not in the headline number, it's in the core number. And now you have the IRX trading at 392 this morning, all right, which essentially mandates at least 25 basis points worth of adjustment downward. It says that 50's on the table as a possibility. All right.
Well, that's because they've already lowered the rates. They just haven't announced it. Yeah.
I get that, okay. But the thing is this. And as I was explaining to somebody a couple of days ago, people are like, well, but the market, this. I said, no, you need to understand something. The way that the Federal Reserve works as a overnight balancing system for the banks, which is absolutely essential, by the way, because, you know, you have too much cash over here, you have too much debt over here. Somehow you got to balance those two things out because, you know, Joe may come into the bank tomorrow and want the money to you know, build a addition on his business or whatever. Okay, so I mean,
which may happen if you got a big bank, you're not getting that loan. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying that clearing has to happen between institutions. All right, it is the essence of what the Fed actually does. It's 90%. It's just like Nielsen. 90% of what Nielsen does is package products analysis. 10% is TV ratings, but that's what everybody knows about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the same thing. So, but the problem is this: because of the fact that if I've got collateral, if I've got treasuries, which has no margin requirement, I can take them to the overnight window, and I can shove them up the Fed's backside and get that overnight money. And then I can go into the market, and if the market is not where the Fed funds rate is, I can arbitrage that trade. I can take the other side of it, the commercial market, all right? And I can do that with infinite size.
Sure you can. But here's what the conversation, I think, really has been all week with all of you guys. Well, we missed Hal, so this is the week for Hal. But yeah. Hal, you missed. I think it was on
Tuesday.
The day you're normally on Tuesday.
Yeah, well, my daughter had a 40-degree fever.
Well, we're getting you back today. There was a thing that came out. It might have been when Kevin was on, but Morgan Stanley or somebody in bleep comes out with this report that said last year it was either 80 or 85% of the population did not match wage growth versus inflation growth.
Yeah.
And the other 10% did. And yet we see this kind of movement in some of the stocks. We see every night, it appears, this last couple of weeks. I haven't seen anything like this in a long time. every night there's been mutual fund buying on the close. And then when I say yep. that for the people in the audience that don't have an account with PTI or don't use an ETF, if you plunk your money into a mutual fund, I'm not saying they're bad or good. There's a lot of advantages to them. But the net of the purchases and sales, if it's a positive, they put it in the market every day on the close.
Right.
And so if you may put, you call your guy up and say, I want to put 50 grand in there, when the market's down 100, well, when at the close, if we're up 100, you're getting the close price, not when you call them. Okay, so but having said that, there's money draining into the system. Now I have a client coming in who has a concentrated portfolio. Actually, I've got five clients coming in with concentrated portfolios. And I just looked at this, that NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Apple are now 25% of the Qs.
Yep.
Well, guess what? I can't hedge that guy's portfolio by buying Qs. I'm buying the same damn thing. I mean,
right,
so
exactly.
We've got that phenomenon going. We've got some companies that seem to be getting more in bed with government, which they've been doing anyway, sort of like the military people used to be. Now, is that you got to kind of figure all these variables, and they're hard to figure. I mean, and the other thing is what you guys are, well, we haven't mentioned, is you look at Microsoft's trading 506. How many other companies through the years are embedded in that 506 that are no longer around?
Well, that's part of the problem with concentration is as you know, it is part of the reason that the market tends to take an escalator up as that concentration occurs, and then one or more of them trips over itself and ends up coming down the Empire State Building from the top of the fence.
Yeah.
All right. And that sort of thing happens when you get this. And one of the things that I always think is interesting is, you know, if you listen to the CNBC crowd that's on, and you know, Fox Business, and you know, the different people that they have on doing this, everybody is all gaga about so-and-so's up the butt of NVIDIA, so-and-so's up the butt of the Chinese government, so-and-so's up the butt of the American government, and it's like, you know, I've seen this movie before a couple of times, and people that weren't around, they're not here anymore, saw that movie a few times as well. Most of the people I talk to at this point who are out there in the market, they were children when 2000 happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Or they weren't born yet. All right. My daughter, she was a toddler when that happened.
Well,
okay, a little bit better than that. But she certainly didn't know anything about money.
People forget the past. That's the whole...
Well, I understand that, and then we get to do it again, Chief, because that's how it works.
Yeah, history tends to repeat, and repeated history repeats repeatedly.
I'm going to lob this one at Hal with the stuff with the tariffs.
Yeah.
No, it's gone before the Supreme Court. And blah, blah, blah. I think... I don't know what they're going to do, one way or the other, but in any case, I don't believe it. I think... Can I ever say the four of us are in agreement? I'm going to say that the four of us have been in agreement from day one that the Trump original estimate of $660 billion in tariffs was a little high. No.
Yeah, it's
because
high.
A lot of people were saying people are going to absorb, but the fact is, I think it's somewhat high. Well, I think Kyle, maybe later when it's just he and I, we'll go through the Treasury report that I think came out yesterday, right, Kyle? I haven't seen yet. I was worried more about the shooting, but...
yeah, I got it.
Now... How is it, even in you know, St. Ronald Reagan's first or second year, everybody remembers Dutch dropping all the taxes. Nobody remembers, was it 18 months later, they put through the biggest tax increase on earth because they were horrified at what it was doing to the monthly Treasury numbers. So nobody remembers that part of St. Reagan. Now, how exactly...
It used to be St. Reagan, though, because now we just ignore the problem.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not... I actually think that, you know... Ronald Reagan was a pretty good guy, but my point is how exactly it's not even talked about. It's not even you know, peeing in the room at this point. Is if this falls short, let's say even if he wins the Supreme Court thing, and it falls halfway short, it's $400 billion. How are we going to avoid some massive tax increase here? How can we possibly avoid it?
We're not, and the thing is that I mean you look at what's going on within CMS, okay, and this is, you know, I've been screaming about this for 30 years, all right, because the pattern was clear. across from last year to this year, to this point in the fiscal, the spending there is up 10%.
Yeah.
All right. And by the way, that's $2 trillion.
Well, who was the president?
The total.
Who was the president other than me? Who's the oldest here, Kevin? Who was the president, Kevin? Was it Janssen with the Vietnam thing that was suggesting the 10% across the board tax surcharge or something? What would we need now? We need like a 40% to even up, wouldn't we?
You'd have to kill. You can't get this through revenue. You have to kill the spending.
Well, I understand that, but just looking at the numbers, I mean, at that time that went over that went over like a fart in church, and he never got away with it.
Well, this will too. Yeah,
yeah, I'm saying, but now it would have to be 25% or something. We're not even on the same page.
Chief, we are. Look, total receipts this year so far. Okay, I've got the MTS up here. Total receipts so far is $4.691 billion. Total outlays thus far, $6.664 billion.
So we're $1.5 trillion in the hole so far. Well, we only got, 1 month ago? 2 months ago?
Yeah, you got one. Well, no, this is July. Is this July? Or this is
gotta be August.
No, this is August. Okay,
so you got one more month.
We got one more month, right. But yeah, I mean, and the thing is you look at this, the fiscal deficit last month was 50%.
Yeah.
Okay, the receipts were $344 billion. We spent $689.
Well, I want to ask Hal specifically a question because he reminds me so much of Little Milty these days. a student, and it wasn't me, I wasn't one of the guys that asked questions. Although in Hal's class, I would ask questions all the time just to piss him off.
That doesn't piss me off. I actually enjoy it. It's fun.
Oh, not if it's like eight in a row and everybody else wants to leave.
No, the more questions, the better.
All right. Well, anyway.
More engagement.
The question
was. Unless it's at the end of class and when everybody wants to leave.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody hates that guy.
I've been in classrooms where the questions continue and, the bell, there's no bell, but the bell rings. And I've had students stay and just pepper me with questions and for 30 minutes after class stops. So.
Yeah, I love it when they hang around, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a blast.
Someone says, I have one more question, and everybody else is like, come on, man. I'm
gonna go on. Well, Notre Dame.
Well, I always tell people class is over, but this is office hours.
Oh. So, but Milton Friedman was asked the question by a student, what do you think about the federal deficit? And the answer was, now this is a political question, not an economics question. The answer was, I don't worry about it at all. Because it's like, Kevin's house. Mrs. Kevin owes Kevin $50. Who cares? The house is flat.
Yeah.
So and because at that time, I'm going to guess.
Don't ever say that word, those words again, Mrs. Kevin. I'm done with that.
Oh, God. All right. Well, all right, Mrs. Hal. He's the only one out of the three of us that still got one. Anyway, his question was, doesn't matter because you can always. Even though nobody would want to, you could always raise taxes or do something and get it back because it's all in house. Well, we're 45% and have been for a while, sometimes bordering on 50, out of house. And we have, a president who's in, Biden did the same thing, just a different way. We have a president who's trying to, ruffle the world stage using essentially money, tariffs and other stuff, and intimidating people by cash. I don't know that he has as much power to do that as in Milton Friedman's time, because right now that I think if Friedman was alive today, he wouldn't give the same answer, would he?
I don't think he would, and I think the key issue here, and I think the reason why I believe Milton Friedman's wrong, is because of the Cantillon effect. Most textbooks today in macro or money and banking teach the expansion of central bank fiat currency, where they inject money into the system by buying bonds from banks. They teach it this way, where they observe a bunch of money going into the system, like say today, they ignore all the distributional effects in between that and when all those distributional waves have settled down. So they see the chunk of money that goes into the system and they observe it when basically everything settles down. And when you do that, you don't observe the distributional effects. What I mean by that is who gets the money first? That's the key. Who gets the money first? I don't get the money first.
No.
the guy driving the garbage truck doesn't get the money first. We all get it last. And so the Cantillon effect is incredible. It observes the conclusion of the quantity theory of money, but it also observes all those distributional effects.
Right,
but when the financiers get this money first, and they're able to buy assets before prices go up.
Well, this is
by the time that wave gets to us, the prices have gone up, our wages haven't, and then we get the money, and then we have an opportunity to do what?
Well, you're that's exactly why I asked you the question. You're analyzing today's world. In Milton Friedman's world.
This was Richard Cantillon's world of 17.
I know, but in his world, we had just come out of a world war where.
No, we're talking 17.
I know, but I'm saying in his what he was talking about is we just come out of we'd come out of a world war where people all of a sudden were making money and people were running around telling people to buy bonds. Back in the government, and virtually the government was running a huge deficit, but they didn't print the money like they do today. They actually were borrowing it from people on huge campaigns, and when the war was over, they essentially paid it back. So for his point of view, in that little world, he's absolutely correct. That was the reason for my question to you is, we're no longer in that little world.
If most Americans are buying these bonds,
then I
would agree with him. But if if financiers are buying those bonds with that printed money first, then they're going to benefit from it. Right?
That's why I asked you, because it's a different world, so, and it ends up in a different place.
By the time that money wave, by that one-time injection gets to us, prices have gone up, and everything we buy has gone up, and our wages haven't kept up with the inflation that the Federal Reserve creates.
Okay, we go back to that.
And it's really curious why the Cantillon effect has been overlooked. I mean, people talk about it, but not like the quantity theory of money. And I think the reason why the quantity theory of money still is a staple in macro is because it hides.
Yeah.
I have colleagues who say helicopter money is great, but helicopter money doesn't exist. They don't spread it evenly throughout the United States.
They
give it to a very select few people who buy financial assets, an NFL football team.
Right, you're slipping into master's talk here, or PhD talk.
Oh, sorry.
But no, again, the simple part is for the listeners, not that our listeners are simple, is if the government's going to overspend what they take in, there's three ways they got to do it. They got to raise taxes, which we don't like. They're going to borrow it, which they used to do, or they can pour more money in the system. And you're so used to, and I am too, in the last 25 years, we're pouring money in the system. We ignore that you could actually have done one of the other two. they're just not very popular, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we could raise taxes. We don't want to. And oh, by the way, we could borrow money only from our own people.
Quantity theory of masked the benefits that accrue to a very small group of people. It masked that, and that's why I think it's still being taught. I think that's why it's staple in economics, because it kind of masked that whole thing.
Are you saying Larry Ellison is doing a bit better than the four of us?
Well, I think Larry Ellison does well because the Fed creates an incredible amount of inflation, and two, because his clients are these big firms with big data that need it manipulated, and he doesn't need necessarily to partner with government. What he needs government to do, and I don't know if he's lobbying for this, but he needs regulations that just choke the small business out.
There's enough of those.
Because if all that's left over with all these intrusions in the market by government, if all that's left over are these huge, massive companies, then he can lock them in like I'm locked into Amazon or my wife is locked into iPhones.
I lob you one? Okay, I don't want to blow every way on this one, but at one point, Crowell, Kevin, pile in. At one point yesterday when Oracle was up $100, all right, that's... there are 2.1 billion shares outstanding, so it's $210 billion in wealth, right? At the same time, NVIDIA was up $8. Now, there's $25 billion, so that's another $200 billion. Microsoft was up something, and somebody else was up something. So I basically would have, back of my behind math, I got us up, at that time, almost $700 billion, $600-something billion in wealth in like 4 hours, which probably was the entire market. When would you say, Al, 1995 or something? Now, what is that? It's not cash. But it could be somebody who had 1,000 shares of Oracle at PTI or any other firm. He could call up the next day and he could spend, well, if he had 1,000 shares, he's up $100,000. No, he's up $1,000,000, right? So, no, if he's got 1,000 shares, he's up $100,000. He could call up tomorrow and buy another stack for $50,000 and take the loan out, and he'd have to send in a check. Now, that's not into the money system yet. It's not money, but as soon as somebody borrows at it, and we go buy it and borrow from our clearing firm, now it's money, right? So it's in the money supply. This could conceivably, are we reaching a point?
Well, that's why margin debt for, I think, two consecutive periods topped $1 trillion.
Well, which leads me to the question: are we to the point where, if the Fed really wanted to do their job, would they be increasing the margin requirement from 50 to 60, and maybe the reserve requirement back up to 10% from zero? Is it time?
Yes.
Well, I don't think they need to fiddle with. I don't think they see a need to fiddle with reserve requirements, because what they do is, if they want banks to hold more reserves, they just raise interest on reserves.
Okay, but still, I mean, Carl, you were going to say something about the margin thing.
Yeah, the problem you have with the margin situation is that, I mean, if you look at ultimately, why did 1929 happen? Why did the spike high and then the crash come? And the answer was that you could turn that crank essentially an infinite number of times. I mean, not really, because there is a margin requirement.
Okay, but before 29, before anyone further with this, there was a big rule change after that.
There was. And the thing is that we are in, I mean, when you look at where things are today, if you think about the craziness of this, and if you think that margin requirement, that initial and maintenance margin requirement that is imposed on, on your clients, for example, Chief, if you think that's actually a meaningful thing in the hedge fund world and stuff, you're dead wrong. It's not.
Oh, I know, but you can have risk-based margin, market maker, all kinds of different spots.
Well, not only that, but you have the ability. There is in the FX markets and in other areas where foreign exchanges are involved, there are ways to get around those limits, and they are actively exploited. And so,
well, the futures markets are totally different.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
The actual amount of margin out there, the actual leverage out there, is wildly greater than what is represented in the margin debt number.
That's scary. Yeah.
Well, that's true. And people always, one of the things that always gets me is people are like, it's not that high. It's, as a percentage. I'm like, no. You have to. I've done work throughout my career for banking institutions that were, as an example, actively exploiting foreign exchange through, you've got a trading, you're clearing transactions in London, you're clearing transactions in New York, right? And so they write software that, there's a 1/100th of a cent difference in where these two currency trades in New York and London, and for the next 400 microseconds we can skim off this 1/100th.
Yeah, but
of a
penny. If you didn't have that arbitrage, the markets would never match up.
Well, so, I understand, it's a positive that, thing. I understand that, but the thing is, as long as people have to post actual capital behind every one of those, there's no problem with it. The problem is they don't. Okay, and so when it unwinds on them, it goes the wrong way. All of a sudden, I mean, it's picking up pennies in front of a steamroller. You.
Well, that's what I used to do on the trading floor.
I get that, but but the thing is, you're making 1/100th of a cent on every one of these transactions.
Well,
right?
here's where.
But the value at risk is the whole dollar.
Let me take Carl's correct thing and put it more in context. After 1929. Before 29, if you borrowed, if you bought, I'll pick up a stock here, like $100. You bought Walmart. Say it's $100. At PTI, if you bought 1,000 shares, you got to send us $50,000. Your initial margin is 50. Okay, so if Walmart goes down $5 today, you're okay in terms of sending us more dough because the maintenance margin is 30. There's a buffer there. That's what came before 29. There wasn't. So in before 29, if you're down $5,000, I'd be calling you up saying, "Hell, I need $5,000."
Yeah,
okay, and that changed. So there's not as much push from the retail stock side as there used to be. Now flip over to the futures side. Totally different. You buy a contract of soybeans. I think the margin's $5,000. I'm not sure. We haven't done those in a while. Well, okay, if you lose $1,000 today, you're sending me $1,000. Okay, there's no slide on that. And when you get to currencies, people think currencies are never going to move. And yet, if you get, I mentioned once in a while when I do the report, a 1% move in a currency is in a week is incredibly unusual. It's incredibly dangerous. And nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. I mean, I think you guys do. But if all of a sudden you get a 2% move in a currency, you could bury some massive company. You could bury a bank. You could bury a country, for God's sake.
You can get 50-to-1 leverage in FX markets.
Yeah.
Wow.
So just because I'll say the retail market, which we deal in, is safer than most, but we have people that trade futures. We have people that aren't happy trading the spiders. They want to trade the S&P futures. Okay, they're in a totally different margin load. We're constantly talking to those people. Hey, buddy, you're long three. But here's where it even gets worse. If for instance, Hal, you really knew what you were doing trade-wise.
I don't.
And 2 years ago, you bought one gold contract. And I forget what the margin is. Say it's $10,000. Well, gold is enough to go straight up. So as soon as you're up $10,000, you now have 20,000, right? You can have two contracts.
Yeah.
And then if it goes up another $5, because now you got two, you're up another $10,000, you can have three contracts. So if you just, every time you've made the money, you used it and kept minimum margin the whole way, how much money would Hal have made in 2 years in gold, for God's sake, Carl? Because if you're right, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Well, when you're wrong, you're broke.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to be right, more right than wrong, because the Fed, its job is to create inflation. And these leveraged purchases like we're talking about, they really only work when in an environment of constant, continuous inflating by a central bank. And the 29 crash, it's not a coincidence that it happened about 13, 14 years after the formation of the Fed. Let's just, you know, be real there, because I don't think people who borrow money to buy things would have access to the kind of credit that was used in 29 if it wasn't for a central bank inflating the currency.
Well, what we're saying, though, is the way it's set up even now is the amount of...
But it's only successful if there's constant inflation.
Right, we started all this by saying you're kind of locked into that, and I'm not going to disagree with you. Yeah. I'm saying the other day, just in 4 hours, there was $400 billion more in potential borrowing power just in this industry.
Yeah.
That's more than the Fed would ever do in a month.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Fed creates a little bit of the inflation. Most of it's created through through bank lending, but that bank lending inflation is only possible because what is the Fed? The lender of last resort, right?
That's the regulatory, all right, so Bernanke, for all of his foibles and insanity, okay, what is the, does anyone remember even the seminal quotation, the statement he made? It's got to have been close to 20 years ago now. Remember what it was?
I do, give me, say it, because it'll take me a minute, but I do remember he had one. It was just like Greenspan's. Greenspan's was the irrational exuberance. What was Bernanke's?
Right. It is the Federal Reserve's job to take the punch bowl away just as people start getting drunk.
Hmm. Well, and he's right.
By the way, since he left...
Well, I don't think it's... Yelling, I think the problem with that is it acknowledges Powell, the Fed creates the punch bowl.
Well, the Fed also fills the punch bowl up with booze when the time is right, right?
But this time... I'm gonna,
since Bernanke's been gone... And by the way, he didn't take it... he spiked it. a bunch of times. So, I mean, he may have said that, but that wasn't what he did. Since that time, Yellen and now Powell, has anybody taken the punch bowl and put it in the back?
No.
Yeah. Well, Powell, when he first came in, started to do that after the after the COVID thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right up until the market had a little bit of a tantrum.
Yeah. And then we got called to the White House, and I always said he was either waterboarded or paddled, and he came out and started throwing money again.
Yeah, and so here's the thing, though. The problem with this, there's a ton of people that, you know, that comment on my articles and, you know, on my site. And of course, I hear the same sort of thing all over the place when I'm out getting a beer in the evenings with friends, too, right? And the answer is, they're never gonna pull us back. They're never gonna do it. And you know, and there's usually, you know, sometimes there's a conspiracy involved. You know, well, it's, you know, it's the tribe, it's the this, it's the that, you know, whatever. Okay. And my answer to all of them is the same as it's always been, which is mathematics is not a set of suggestions, and all exponential functions eventually end. And when they do, if you try to continue to goose them when they've gone vertical, you are in trouble.
But you guys,
in trouble.
You and the person you're drinking with, it's like it happens all the time on the show when we all talk, you're answering the wrong question. Will there be a cliff? Probably. Will
No, it's a yes.
Okay,
it's not probably.
All right, but I'm saying, I'll use the guy who's in the office right now. Will Trump and his son, who's in tight with Ellison or these other people, is he one day going to say, let's pull this back and drop these stocks in half? They're not going to do it on purpose. Nobody's going to do that now. We're past that.
I agree, Tom, but the question is, and I'm going to have to jump off now, so I'm heading over to campus, I'll listen to you guys.
I'm going to jump off, too, because I have to go to the VA.
Yeah. So the question gets to be, okay, we believe there's a crash coming. It's inevitable. And some of these big companies may or may not be able to fight it. They may be tight enough with government to survive. But in reality, who will survive it? You know, that's your big question: is where's the carnage going to be, and where are the companies that are positioned to survive it?
Well, surviving is not the question. If your stock is down 90% and you happen to own it, the company survives. You might not.
You might not. Yeah.
Well, the people that are
you might be hung in the in the town square too.
But here's the thing. I mean, if you have used this ramp in Nvidia stock as a margin, you know, as your base for your margin loan, right? And by the way, I think the company, you know, I don't think there's any way that Nvidia as a company, just looking at their balance sheet and knowing what they actually make besides AI garbage, I don't think there's any chance they're going to go out of business.
No, I don't either.
Right. But I do think there's a very real chance that the company trades for $20 a share. Now, what happens to you if you have a margin loan out of 177?
Well, I think the real, I mean, Kevin, to answer your question from my end, and there are a lot of people. Matter of fact, I've gotten all kinds of interest in the last few weeks. I've got more clients coming in than we have in a while. Every one of them has, they all were successful in life. I don't ask them, you know, a lot of retired. I don't ask them what they did or whatever. None of my business. But it's, they have a 401k. They were with a company that must have been successful. They didn't have all its company stock in there like Bear Stearns and lose it all. So they pile out of there into an IRA. And a lot of them are in. I mean, a lot of them are in Apple. I mean, I was mentioning that on Joel's show yesterday. It's probably out of all the people that I do business with, it could be, you know, it's been a life changer for a lot of people. But yet, I won't say none because I don't dig into their past that much. But none of them, I don't think, ever got that kind of wealth just by making $300,000 a year, living on 50, and putting $250 in the bank. It's the wealth chunk is this market,
right?
And people are really used to having, oh yeah, my IRA's $2 million. Yeah, maybe I'll hedge it. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll. Well, they're not ready for it to be a million or 800,000 or 500,000. I'm not saying it's going there. It's not a prediction, but I'm saying the thought of that, everybody's very, very comfortable at these levels, and they should be. I mean, they did the right thing. They invested, and by the way, they landed some of the good stocks. I mean, you don't hear from the people who bought the ones that went to zero, right? they don't have any money to send you. So all you really hear from is the winners, to be blunt. I mean,
that's the way it tends to work.
But now we have an incredible. It's not like 1929. Regardless of all the bull crap you hear, of, you know, even the Shoeshine Boy had stock. Yeah, the Shoeshine Boy in Grand Central Station. I mean, but only 7% of the population had stock in 1929. Well, what's the number now? 70? 65? Right. I mean, it's somewhere in your 401k. You got a share somewhere, unless, you know, you maybe it's not that high because a lot of people don't have it for. But I'm saying, if you have any kind of a thing, any sort of an IRA, if you got any mutual fund, you're in stock someplace. So, yeah. You know, to extend that wealth bubble, you look at the wealth bubble for the last 20 years, how much of it is stock prices and house prices? Carl, it's got to be 80% of it.
Yeah, and that's, and that's the danger, okay, in terms of this sort of stuff. That's where the risk is when you really get down to it, is that there's a great deal of hazard in terms of the unwind. And this is where the crazy unwinds have always come from, because, you know, I knew someone when I sold my company, and I'm living in Chicago at the time for a little while before I moved to Florida, and then I was in Florida, was actually house hunting at the on the day the NASDAQ cracked. Okay, I was woke up in a hotel room and, you know, turned on CNBC, saw that. Oops. And turned it back off and went to bed because my daughter and I had been, you know, playing in the hot tub the night before. And, you know, she's a little kid at the time, okay? Well, the thing is, though, is that about a month and a half, a couple months later, I heard that someone that I knew in the Chicago area, he had been margined up to his you-know-whats.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And got margin called. Didn't have the cash because, of course, you know, he had all these digits on a screen. So he had, you know, he had millions of dollars, but he didn't have anything in the bank. Essentially, he's nothing, right? Got margin called, didn't have it, all right? They liquidated the position, and by the time they got done getting him out of the stuff he was in, he was like 350 in the hole.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay. Well, he didn't have that either, obviously, right?
That's a problem.
He blew his own head off.
That's not good. Kevin, before you go, what about tomorrow? What are the chances?
Well, what about tomorrow? Okay, I'll give you the quick sports recap of everything that you need to know. First of all, you're talking about the Irish versus Texas A&M. They need to win the game. So it's at home. Texas A&M is very good. I think they're probably favored in... You know, they have to clean some things up from the Miami game, but it's a game they can win, should win, and must win. A couple other baseball notes. I was getting worried about the Cubs for a while there, because the number one wild card gets to host all three games in the series, and that looked like it was starting to slip away, but I think that stretched back out to about 3.5-game lead. And the Mets are falling apart, so we may be looking at the Reds or the Giants getting into the mix there, but so that's the sports thing. But here's the other one: don't look now. The White Sox have won 9 of their last 11 games.
Yeah.
Your buddy
Steve Stone. I watched him the other night, and the shortstop hit another home run. And Steve Stone said, he goes, watching this kid is becoming must see TV. He's that good.
Well, he is, and he was their hot prospect, and he was just faltering at the beginning of the season. Now, he didn't make the team that he was supposed to be, you know, the star coming out of spring training. He didn't even make the team, and then he was terrible in Triple A. And to the White Sox credit, they salvaged it. They just shut him down. They said, we're going to take you away from the team in Triple A. We're going to go out to Arizona at our facilities, and we're going to work on a bunch of things for several weeks. They put him back in, and since then, he's been fantastic. So they may have salvaged a guy who had bust written all over him. And so that's kind of cool. So, yeah, that's sort of my summary. Still paying attention to Chicago baseball. The Cubs aren't in great shape because they have some guys injured, but they just got Tylan back, and so, you know, maybe some things will fall into place for them, but they really, really do want to play those first three games in Wrigley Field.
I think Ricketts wants it there more than you. Think of the money.
I think he does, but, you know, from if you look at the splits of some of the pitchers, they do very, very well at home. Not quite as well on the road.
We'll talk about this more on Wednesday, but 3 years in a row now, no matter who's manager, it seems all of a sudden they can't hit in September. Is there something there we should be thinking of? I mean, the same thing happened to Rossi. And they blamed
August either, so it doesn't.
What? I mean, the same thing happened to Rossi. They pretty much blamed it on him. And it happened last year, and it happened again this year.
Yeah, so that's kind of weird. I think they have Carl's buddy, Moises Ballesteros, back on the roster for now. So he might help him hit, because there's a guy that just hits. You know, he's hit everywhere he's been.
Well, the kid, Alcantara, I watched him bat about five times. He's not up to it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I saw when Moises was down here doing the double A thing, I saw him get up there a couple times, and he liked to poke him, and he was pretty good doing it too.
Well, yeah. I think he's going to Suzuki has another year on his contract, and he's the full time designated hitter now. I think that's going to be Ballesteros in a year.
Yeah, I mean that was what he was good at. But you know, when he for a guy playing double A ball, I was like, oh, this guy's going to get.
Well, you know the story on him when he was.
Be the backup catcher too, and he can be the and he might even be able to play a little backup first base. So you know, that's one guy who's going to be in it. And I don't know if you saw Owen Casey when he was at Double A, but you know, he's their other hot prospect, and I don't think they're going to re-sign Tucker, and I think Casey's going to slide into their right field.
Well, there you go.
We know the story on that Ballesteros guy. He's from Venezuela, right? And so whoever was scouting him or noticed him at age like 15 or something, sent all these films up to the Cubs, and the head of scouting goes, "Hey, you can't just show us the at bats where the guy gets a hit. You got to show us the other ones." He goes, "He always gets a hit."
All right, guys. You guys have a good weekend. And,
Kevin, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Al, I will be listening as I head over to campus.
Talk to you tomorrow, Kevin. Hal, you still with us? Or help? He dashed.
He's listening on his car.
He's off. Yeah.
I can see.
I'm in my car driving.
Hey, give us a little bit of a thing on the CPI, and we're going to get money supply in another couple of weeks. I think we're on a trend up here. What is the? Is there a cure for stagflation? There wasn't last time. I don't think there is this time. Is there?
Well, I think the key is to unrestrain the economy. I mean, the economy is so restrained that you see this concentration. I think Carl mentioned earlier, we have these industries that are getting highly concentrated. And I think the cure, in my opinion, is always unrestrain the economy. Encourage small businesses. And that's the cure to it.
Hell, you and I have been agreeing on that for probably long before we met. I don't see it happening ever. It's like you and I yelling into space, for God's sake.
That's the key, though. That's the key.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen, Hal. And the reason is that you will never see antitrust enforcement actually show back up in the U.S.
I think a lot of the problem is just these anti-competitive regulations and restrictions and laws and licensing. Licensing gets increasingly more convoluted and difficult because, you know, they want a shortage of that profession or this profession because the people in that profession want higher salaries. So I don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the cure.
Yeah, but
we can barely hear you, bud, so we'll talk to you on Tuesday. Think we'll have anything to talk about on Tuesday?
Oh, God.
I think so. Hey, you know what? Hang for a sec. You know what? I got a guy coming in, good guy. I played softball with the dude for years, and he's in the metal coatings. He's got a patent, and his coatings that, you know, you can use. It's a dry coating, so for pollution wise, it's way better. But supposedly, it's terrific for like bridge stuff and everything. I mean, it lasts like longer than the old stuff. And he's got a pet, and he's finally starting to get some real traction with it, which, you know, is not going to be the reason why he's on here. But when we did the U.S.'s of A, did the thing with U.S. Steel, you know, other than the name U.S. on it, which is a hard tug. I mean, my question is, do I really need these guys? Or now, what is the quid pro quo for, you know, Trump getting, you know, essentially a board seat, for lack of a better term? I mean, are we going to, you know, are they going to be included in every bid? What are we going to do? So, anyway, Bob's going to come on and talk to us about you know, who's in the industry, the other, who are the other six people? You know, there's like six other companies that are on the New York Stock Exchange, and who does what, who does, and I basically said to him, well, I don't want to pre-do the interview, but I said, if they were gone tomorrow, would anybody care? And he goes, no. So, I mean, nobody wants to lose, quote, U.S. Steel. He said, but it's not like if they weren't here in the air, and they went out for the bow of an aircraft carrier and the steel there, they put out the specs on the steel, they won't get five other bids. Now, you know, it's not, so the industry is not as concentrated as maybe we were led to believe, according to a lot of these guys. But anyway, he's going to come in on Wednesday. It should be an interesting conversation.
Oh, yeah, that sounds cool.
Well, Hal, take care of yourself, bud. Say one more thing, but you barely
hear. I'm just curious, does that steel coating, do they use it in glass at all for energy efficiency, or is it?
I think it's a rust. You know, I'll ask on Wednesday, because if you notice, I don't think it's his stuff, but something like that. When they used to put up, you know, the bridges, they were always that ugly red color that was all paint, you know, red on paint, and now you see they're gray. I mean, it's a better stuff, and I don't know if that's dry applied, but his is dry applied. We'll find out on Wednesday. All right, good luck at the V8, our bud.
Have a good weekend.
All right, Carl, we got a SP futures down 5, NASDAQ futures up 17. That's kind of good enough there. I have some portfolio questions for you, Hal. I've been, yesterday could have been, again, you know, there's good days and bad days. Yesterday could have been for our clients here that we, you know, that use us to manage the money. All four of our biggest holdings were up yesterday huge. Like, that never, I guess everybody else says it happens every day to them, but it's rare for that to happen. I mean, we have a lot of people that are in the Russell that didn't want to be in the queues, and the Russell was up like $4 yesterday, and we have an awful lot of people that have their own, maybe mutual funds somewhere else with their S&P 500. So here they're in a couple of different things. And my brother Dan has a lot of people in the XLV, which is the healthcare stuff, which has been dragging. They were up a bunch yesterday. I've been in the GDX for a lot of people, which is the gold miners.
Right.
Mainly because, Carl, it's not, I always try and get an edge of some kind. And, you know, sometimes I have an edge and sometimes I don't. But I kept charting the difference between the gold miners and the gold itself. And it seemed like they were really lagging. So right. I have a lot of people in there, and you know, I'm always honest. I was probably a year and a half or 2 years early to the point where, and I don't know whether I just had staying power or I was stubborn, one or the other. You never know which, right? Now all of a sudden in the last couple of months, this thing's been on a tear to the point now where I'm wondering if it's caught up and passed, and should I get out of here or you know, nudge my puts up to the right at the top. I think it goes up every day, even when gold doesn't. I mean, I wish.
GDX is essentially, you know, a derivative, if you will, on the underlying, right? Because it's the miners.
It's Nucor is 5%. Somebody else is 8%. There's a list. You can tell who they are.
But what I'm saying is that, I mean, if you think that the cost, so it's the same sort of thing that happens with the oil. To the same sort of extent, for the same sort of reason. There's a floor price in the market below which I can't get the stuff out of the ground for more than, you know, it costs me more than I can sell it for.
Okay? Yeah.
So there's a floor price below which I don't make any money. And above that level, every small increment above that makes me more money on a percentage basis. Right, because I have that fixed cost element of things.
Well, that's what I was thinking, that they were lagging.
Right, but that's, you know, but I mean, that's the, you know, that's the thing with any resource extraction play, is that there's a floor price, and so you want to get into them when the commodity is below there but starting to trend upward, because that's the, you know, that's the buy point, if you will. Because the companies are not making much, if any, money, if they're not, and you have to be very careful that they're not levered too greatly, because otherwise they'll blow up before they.
Or actually, with gold companies, you also have to be careful they didn't sell the future.
Well, yeah, and the same thing happens with oil. Okay, in that, you know, I mean, this is why you have this boom and bust cycle in the oil patch, that happens all the time, because you have all these companies that go rah 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 rah, and then of course the price goes down.
You know what, Carl? Not to interrupt, even though I just did. Before there was a GDX, and back on the old trading floor, when you didn't even, before there was an OEX, before there was S&P futures, a lot of guys traded the gold stocks, and they were, it was Barrick Gold and a couple others. And but those guys, I mean, you used to get it across the tape every month. They would let you know how much they hedged.
Oh yeah.
And but is that, I haven't seen that. Those numbers, did they stop giving that out? In other words, if for those that don't know what the hell I'm talking about, say Barrick Gold is mining 1,000 ounces of gold at, you know, $1,000, and their cost is like $950, just like a farmer could, they could go out and sell the gold future for $1,000 and lock in $50.
Right.
But if they did that and gold went to $2,000, they don't benefit.
That's right. They got nothing out of it.
They got nothing out of it. But so you always look to see how much they hedged. But after a period of time, if gold's up to $2,000, it stays there. Eventually, they didn't hedge out 15 years. Eventually, the hedges will come off and they'll start to benefit. And that information is pretty valuable. Yet, I don't see it anywhere. So my first thought when the GDX didn't participate is maybe all these guys hedge. And I looked around. I had trouble. I couldn't find that. Now, all of a sudden, it seems like it's busting out the other way. So I don't think those guys hedged out 2 years, but maybe they did. I don't know.
I mean, it's, I have always... You know, my take on that is that if I was running one of those companies, God help you if you sell that forward and then can't deliver against it. I mean, holy crap.
Well, it's like,
that's a company ending event. All right. So, you know, so the thing is, you only do that with stuff that you're real sure is in the ground and you can get it.
I'll give you a farm example. What if a hailstorm lands on your farm?
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, that. Yeah. Hello. Yeah. The same thing can, it can happen with any commodity, right? So that's, you know, and that's people that have never really kind of looked into it and have never been involved in those areas of the market. You know, there's a lot of people that will play in the commodity futures, but they've never really thought about exactly what goes into, what's behind that.
I got a quick story from there. My brother Dan, who's the president in PTI Securities and does just about everything here, and terrific guy. He started out trading in, I don't remember which he did first. He traded in the Chrysler crowd and the CBOE. Then he went over and traded in the corn option pit. And of course, Dan's personality is, if he's going to be in the corn option pit, he's going to know everything in the world to know about corn, right? And those guys over there, in those days, the corn guys knew everything about corn. The next guy knew everything about wheat. The next guy knew everything about soybeans, because they're all different. They all got different months. They all got different.
Oh yeah.
Different. I mean, every one of them. It's like the kung fu, the original kung fu, or all the different styles. And the guy goes, "How long does it take to learn a style?" And the guy goes, "A lifetime."
Right.
but so there was a program, and Dan was really up on it because he gave a couple of lectures on it. At one point, the Department of Agriculture said, "Well, you know, instead of shorting all these futures and having the same issue Carl just talked about, all of a sudden there's a hailstorm on your farm and you can't deliver, why not just," they actually financed people to just buy puts, where you essentially protected the price but you didn't have any obligation to deliver. And it was, over a couple of years, it was one of the most successful programs, and of course they stopped it.
Yeah.
Because it was working, and it was, guys were having to, maybe did less of the futures and just bought the puts instead, and you know, the grain elevators didn't do as well, and somebody else didn't do as well. But the farmers, it was a much better program, and yet of course they stopped it. Imagine how that could work in our the way our government works.
Go figure, right?
Yeah, go figure. All right, I was kind of yesterday. I was the last couple of days. The talk has all been about the shooting, and you go on the YouTube and. Again, I don't want anybody getting killed, obviously. Plus, you know, just because this guy had conservative views doesn't mean I wouldn't have liked him. I mean, I never didn't meet him, but it's this whole idea of how often this stuff can happen. And there was a report yesterday on YouTube where they said they didn't. I would not know if I had thought about this. They didn't close down the Provo airport right away or something. And there was a private plane, or a plane took off, went somewhere in Arizona, and came back. I'm not saying. Is that a protocol to shut down an airport? Because somebody gets. I don't know. I'm asking.
No. So here's the thing. What makes it suspicious is that for the last, well, really since 9/11. Although, you know, of course, 9/11 was airliners.
By the way, 9/11 was yesterday, anniversary, which we didn't mention.
Yes, and I had an article up on it. But even though, you know, 9/11 was commercial airliners, but with some of the changes that have happened over the years, and the same things happen, actually the same things happen with vessels too, because used to be that only large commercial vessels had AIS transponders, basically a transponder that's connected to your GPS and tells everybody who you are and exactly where you are, what your heading is, and your speed. Okay, now for a boat, if you're a large ship, I'm a guy in a little sailboat and I'm out there and it's at night, this is kind of useful information to pop up on my screen, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, if you and I have a conflict, you're going to win and I'm going
to
lose.
And he's not going to know he had a conflict.
He isn't even going to know he hit me.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And by the way, it may be his fault. It may be my fault. Doesn't matter. I'm the one who's dead. But with aircraft, you have the same kind of thing. And of course, anti-collision between aircraft is just as big a deal, right? Because, you know, people essentially always die when two airplanes hit each other. And so you have a transponder, and with very few exceptions, for any aircraft that's in controlled airspace, that thing has to be on. And the fines for not having it on.
So if I decide I want a pilot's license and somebody takes my butt up a little training mission out of God knows where, a little airport, does that thing have a transponder?
It depends on where it's operating. But if you're out of a controlled field, yeah, it sure does.
But I mean, if we're going out of, you know, Sandwich, Illinois grass field or something.
Well, maybe, but you can't. The thing is that the restrictions are what they are, okay? And certainly a guy with a citation, it's got a transponder.
Okay.
So what made this thing weird was that this guy took off, no filed flight plan, which isn't illegal, okay? But he no filed flight plan, and then a relatively short period into the flight, he goes dark, turns the transponder off. And then some period of time
now
later,
this transponder works at any altitude, so even if he's flying at 300 feet, you can tell where he is.
It transmits your, not just your identification, but also your heading and your airspeed, so that it's a deconflicting tool. Okay, I mean, that's what it's for, is so other people don't hit you and you don't hit somebody else. But the fact, if you turn that thing off without valid justification, the fines are, I mean, we're talking like, you know, $25,000 just because you turned the switch off. Okay. Now, I mean, they break. They can. All right. So, I mean, it's like any other piece of electronics. It can break. But deliberately disabling it is a really serious problem.
Well, this plane that was taken off, we're talking about a 40-year-old Piper Cub, or are we talking about a real plane?
No, it's a jet. It was a jet.
So oh, okay. Oh, then, all right. That's a whole different story then, right?
Yeah, it's a biz jet. And there are a couple of fields, the heading that it was on and the speed that it was traveling at when it went dark, there are a couple of fields that it could have landed at. It then reappeared and landed back in Utah. Transponder was turned back on. It lands in Utah, but it went dark apparently deliberately. Now, here's the thing. There were people that were saying, well, you know, that obviously somebody exfiltrated the shooter in there, blah, blah, blah. No, it's also entirely possible.
It just could have been drugs.
Well, it could have been somebody who was very wealthy and got totally freaked out because he was 10 feet away from the guy when he got plugged.
Yeah, it could be.
Right? And he's got more money than God. And by the way, it's a livery jet. It's not a privately owned registration. They got the tail number on the plane, and it's a livery jet. So you can bet that the FAA and everybody else is going to crawl up those, you know, that company's butt and figure out who was in that thing, right? And why did that go? Why was the transponder turned off? That answer is going to come because, oh boy, are you in a lot of trouble if you do things in the airspace you're not supposed to. So, I mean, there are no do-overs in that situation. I don't buy the conspiracy theory thing because, listen, if you're the guy flying that aircraft and you got the shooter in there and you shut that transponder off, you just got yourself the death penalty in Utah because you're an accessory after the fact.
The picture they show of the kid.
By the way, it was just on the wire a few minutes ago that they caught him. He's in custody.
But I mean, where was the gun in the picture?
Well, so there's apparently security camera. You know, this is when this thing happened originally. I said that the odds of this guy getting
they caught him. Are they sure he's the guy?
Well, here's so. You know, there was the obvious question is, okay, that's a rifle. How'd he get it up there? Okay, because obviously you have to get the gun up there, right? They found the gun in the woods afterwards.
Well, they found a gun.
Well, it had been fired once, and the cartridge, it's a bolt action rifle, and the cartridge was in the chamber.
Well, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying they show a guy fleeing into a home, you know, house area. The picture they show does not have a gun, and all of a sudden the gun is half a mile away in the woods. I mean,
well, the gun was in the woods between the building and the subdivision. Okay,
but it wasn't in the picture that I didn't see.
No, and the fire and the other thing is bolt action weapon, and the cartridge that was expended was in the chamber still. All right, so. It was obviously fired.
All right. Okay.
There were a couple more shells that were, you know, cartridges that were in the magazine. It's a hunting rifle. It's a bolt-action hunting rifle. Although it's actually, from what I understand, it's a Mauser. It's called a Sporter. But, I mean, it's the kind of rifle you use to hunt deer. Okay?
Right.
It's a hunting rifle. You know, scoped. They showed a picture of it. All the people that are saying this was some kind of look, I took 5 seconds of seeing the picture that was released of the weapon that they found. I'm like, that guy is a tool. He had absolutely no idea what the blankety blank he's doing. On the other hand, that kind of a shot from that distance is not especially difficult. So, you know, I'm not surprised.
Well, it would be for Matt, man. I can't imagine that. Nailing somebody.
Well, shooting at a human, yes. But, Chief, I'm willing to bet that even if you'd never fired a rifle before in your life, in about 20 minutes at a range, I could show you how to shoot well enough that you could have done that.
That's pretty scary.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, a human is actually a fairly large target.
Well, I told you I took a concealed carry class, right?
Yeah.
And you had to go to the range, you know, and do the stuff.
Yeah.
And we had worked with the lasers and. I had really never shot before, and they give you this automatic gun, and I'm popping away at this thing. It wasn't that far away, you know, to pass the class. And the guy looks at me, and he goes, I could tell you were an athlete. I mean, it was pretty easy. But then, you know, I actually am a law-abiding person. I started reading all the places, even if I wanted to bring it, I could bring it. I couldn't bring it anywhere, so I never even got one.
It's not worth it.
I mean, no way you could ever have a... You couldn't have one beer if you had the thing with you, for God's sake. You're not going to bring it... I mean, the only time I could possibly use it, when I say use it, for my benefit, is when I drive in the morning in the dead of winter and it's dark and I walk a block from the parking lot to the office. But I can't bring it in the office. And I'm not going to bring it to lunch. I mean, if I ever went to... I mean, I'm not gonna, if I leave in the car... And lock it up in there. That defeats the whole purpose, right? It's just not with me when I'm
walking. There's. I mean, you know, you live in Illinois, okay? we have, of course, Tennessee is a constitutional carry state, so you don't need to have a permit.
Well, but I mean, you can't bring it on a. You can't bring it on a bus. Can't bring it on a train.
Yeah, there's still plenty of places you cannot bring it. Okay, I can't bring it into a school building.
Can't bring it to a park.
I can't bring it into a courthouse.
A park.
Depends. Now, in some circumstances, yes. But yes, I mean, you know, and you better know where those prohibited places are, because if you get caught with it in one of those places, it's a crime. It's not, you know, yeah, I mean, and they're serious about it. And, you know, in this state anyway, you will go to jail for it. So it's not, you know, yeah, it's not fool. They're not fooling around. I mean, if you have any, you know, if you're intoxicated and you're in possession of it, you're in a lot of
trouble. The only person that could actually probably, I keep using the word use it like I'm trying to fire it, is somebody who maybe delivers packages or does something for me. You can only really have it in your car or if you're walking along. And even then, you better not.
It depends on the state to a large extent. We're considerably better about that here than others. But it's the problem, of course, is the thug doesn't care, right? He ignores the law. That's why we call them criminals. So, this is one of the things that my suspicion, and I may be wrong about this, but my instant read on this incident is that the world has changed. This particular act was a world-changing event, and I believe it is absolutely going to be the case.
Why? Because he's conservative?
No, because it's not because he was conservative. It's because he was killed for mere speech. And
what was the lady and her husband killed in Minnesota for?
Chief, I know. All right. How about the Ukrainian refugee, the chick on the train? Okay. How come nobody wants to talk about the problem there?
Well, I'll tell you.
Rather rapidly developed that the guy who did that, okay, and it's not really questionable whether or not he did it because it was on video from six different angles. All right. The guy who did that a few months ago was busted. The magistrate judge who did not hold him, in addition to not holding him, despite him being a convicted felon previously, right? He'd been arrested and served time for armed robbery. Besides him being a convicted felon, and apparently, supposedly they say schizophrenic, he has severe mental issues as well. She diverted him into a program she runs and benefited from.
Well, what do you say we go to break and then pick that up? Because the whole thing is such a mess. When I read this guy's comments about guns and people getting shot is just the price we have to pay, and I'm going, oh God.
I'll tell you what. Everyone, if you're one of the people that has made that sort of a comment and you did it in public on social media, you're going to be unemployed and you're never going to get a job again. And it's already starting. Like I said, this is a world-changing event, Chief. And the number of people who were cheering that he was shot.
Well, why would anybody do that?
You don't think there are, you know, this is one of the
how can I even say this? The guy from United Healthcare, there are all kinds of people that actually feel that they or a family member have gotten screwed by United Healthcare.
Okay, well, guess what?
This guy did nothing to anybody except talk.
Well, that's right. That's my point, is that there are plenty of people who believed that and have said that the guy that United Healthcare, he had it coming.
I would never say that. You know that.
But there are plenty of people who did because their loved one is dead.
They would say something needed to happen and short of this, and it never did.
The point being, they believe this guy was personally responsible for a loved one of theirs being dead.
SP Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures up 9. Give us a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Blowing off back Stocks and Jocks. Now, tomorrow, Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures up 9. We're not doing much today. After the CPI number yesterday, we were up on the day. I don't know why. The number, I guess it was expected, but it's not good. I mean, 0.4% times 12 is 4.8, the way I my simple math goes, if you look the last 3 months, it's 3.6. It's nowhere near the two these guys are talking about. It's really not even on the same planet. But now we're into the Fed decision next week. See individual stocks. We've got J.P. Morgan down $1.40. We've got Microsoft up $6.59. Microsoft just goes up every day. We've got United Healthcare up $2.59. What are we doing with Oracle, the favorite stock of the week? Down $2.82 to $3.05, but still it's up. It's had quite the week. DAX down 25.1%. FTSE up 33.3%. CAC around down 21.2%. So let's just say not much going on there, which, you know, it's not summer anymore, but it's a Friday of the week before the Fed decision. Where Nikkei is up another 395.9%, 44,768. Never thought I'd see that. Hang Seng up 301, 1.1%. Those guys keep going up every day. Shanghai down 4, let's call that flat. So everybody likes those Asian markets again. I don't know what in the political ream, why all of a sudden they're going up there. Maybe we'll talk to Carl about that a little bit. It's kind of hard to keep track of who's winning and losing on this tariff and all this stuff. They got the 10-year up 5 basis points, 4.07. I guess that's not a surprise. Oil, let's see where we are around $63. 63.76, back and forth. Up about $1.39. It's been between 65 and 61 now for really quite a while. Gold continues to go up $6, 36.79. It was up a little more earlier, but silver up 43 cents, 42.58. That's a lot. Foreign exchange, the one we were also talking about earlier. Dollar is a little off, so the euro's back over 117. The British pound stays over 135, but the euro was down under 116, quite a bit under 116 about 2 weeks ago. Crypto up 560, 114, 985. Ricky, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 740 here in beautiful Chicago. 62 degrees right now with a high of 81. Sunny, partly cloudy today, and it's going to be kind of warm. Tonight we have a thunderstorm in spots towards dawn in the low of 68 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 82 degrees right now with a high of 101. Very warm with plenty of sunshine. Tonight will be clear with a low of 76 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 33 minutes. We're looking at 52 minutes. Edens from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 43 minutes. 28 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 44 minutes. This Sunday, the 14th, we have Bears at Lions, 12 p.m., and Panthers at Cardinals at 3:05 p.m. Yesterday, the White Sox beat Rays 5-1, and today we got Rays at Cubs, 1:20 p.m., White Sox at Guardians at 6:10 p.m., and finally, Diamondbacks at Twins at 7:10 p.m. Back to you guys.
So, Carl, where do you think, I mean, all these countries, every time, well, now we're pissed off at what, Europe or somebody for not putting big tariffs on India and somebody else, and...
Oh, this is this is the problem that you got with all this kind of crazy stuff with, you know, with the tariff thing and trying to use it as a geopolitical tool, which of course, by the way, Trump is by no stretch of the imagination the first person to try to do that.
In the last 60 years, he has.
No, actually, not in the last 250 years of America. Hello.
Well, no, we there was a big YouTube thing yesterday. Is the thing that created Hitler was the tariff.
To a large degree, the Treaty of Versailles is what led to Hitler.
Well, and it was Smoot-Hawley. You know, interesting part about that.
Smoot-Hawley was part of it, yeah.
I know Trump's not big on history, but Smoot-Hawley both, one of them was ahead of the Ways and Means Committee. They both were roundly voted out of office a year after this tariff went in. So, I mean... I'm not predicting, I'm just saying.
Well, the problem with attempting to squeeze a population in the way that we have all seen happen over the last, you know, how many years now, right? And the craziness that's going on with the, you could call it an oligarchical concentration within the United States. Right, which a lot of people are, oh, no, that's Russia. Right? Yeah. No, that's kind of here,
yep.
Right? The problem with doing that is that you have to be very careful how far you go with it, because it tends to have, well, you look at what just happened in Nepal as an example.
Yeah.
Did anybody pay attention to the fact that the government got sacked there by a bunch of young people?
That's what Wayne was talking about that yesterday.
Yeah, I mean... The government was literally sacked okay, in the space of 24 hours. And oh, by the way, what set it off was that they tried to restrict internet access and people's ability to communicate. And the people of the country said, no, you're out. You're leaving now, whether you like it or not. And your options are to leave or die.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well,
was the other place? It was Nepal and some other place yesterday, too, or this week.
Yeah, so I mean,
what was the other country that Wayne mentioned yesterday?
I don't know who the other one was.
He said there was another one who did almost the same. It was some other place. Was it Bangalore or some place or other?
Yeah. So I mean,
somewhere in Southeast Asia, I think it was.
Yeah, so this is one of those things, that I just kind of look at and say, you can go to a certain degree, but it's always the riposte that I have to those people who say that, I've got a guy on my forum, I like him, he's been there for a very long time, right? I mean, I've been running that thing all the way back to, before the crash, started it up in 07, so I mean, it's 15 years now, right? Maybe more than that, coming up on 20.
Yeah, when you say the crash, I still think of 87, but go ahead.
No, I'm talking about the 08 blow up, right? I mean, I started writing on my blog in 07, in the early part, April of 07. And that's, it was the dislocation in the Asian markets that got me interested enough to start a daily column on it. And of course, a year and a half later, we know what happened. So, but his shtick, and he's absolutely convinced, is that central banks and governments absolutely require the Ponzi to continue. Inflation must be maintained. Deflation cannot be allowed. Sorry, they will not allow it to occur. They will not allow it to occur. Not only do they, now there's a difference between I desire something and it won't happen. Okay, those are not the...
who are we talking about?
Oh, no, this is just a nobody that happens to be somebody that's been around on my system for a long time. All right? But he is utterly convinced that, this is that... I said to him, I said, look, you can go to the point where you try to do this into a vertical ramp, which all exponential functions always eventually do, and you end up with people running around with wheelbarrows to get a loaf of bread.
Well, okay, I mean, the
currency.
The issue, well, not the issue, the phenomenon you have with when you have really, really smart people on your show or who you hang out with, not many people have a show, I'm lucky enough to do that, but is really smart people think that other people are really smart too. And when I say that, it's... I always quote Milton Friedman because I was so impressed with the guy, and I happen to have him in class and went to a bunch of his lectures out of class. Some of the stuff he said, he goes, the real problem with inflation is when it starts out, it feels so good.
Oh, yeah.
and I hear about it as a guy, nice guy, he's been retired, I don't know what the hell he did, but he's a good golfer, comes to Tripoli once in a while, my local bar, and one night Fed did some stuff, and when I say he's retired young, he must have some stock someplace. I mean, he's got some wealth. Maybe his parents, I have no idea. I never asked him. But I said, he's, what'd you think of the Fed today? And I said, well, they're doing what they're doing. They're making sure the market, never goes down. They're pumping money in the system. And he looks at me and goes, that's exactly what they're supposed to do. I go, okay then. What percentage? Now, we've been debating, the four of us. We had four on today, which was nice. All the stuff we said, if we went out and interviewed 90% of the people of what the Fed ought to do, and how maybe somebody's stocks are too high, and if they go much higher when they come down, I've been in the business a long time. I know that when things that go from 20 bucks to 80 bucks, when maybe, I won't say they shouldn't have, but let's say they do, and then they come crashing down to 20, we're not even. More is lost on the way down than was made on the way up because of leverage, which you and Hal talk about eloquently all the time. But nobody else feels that way. Nobody else feels
that
way.
Oh, I know.
And they think that if I own it and it's worth 20 and it's trading 50, what's wrong with that? Duh, right? I mean, I guess, if somebody owns, bids me 30 grand for my 18-year-old pickup, maybe I'll sell it to him, but in the back of my mind, what's he doing? But I'm saying, don't think for a second that because I outlined this stuff that anybody really agrees with us. I mean, every new account I've had But people that have, you know, a lot of money, and we get a lot of retirement people. You know, what's the point of me saying your Apple shouldn't be actually, I think Apple's probably the one, because they have so much cash, might be the one that's, you know, I'm not worried about as much. So I said on, you know, I think your Apple's worth like 50. Well, that's an opening salvo for not getting an account, right?
Well, yeah. But see, here's the basic.
By the way, I don't think it's worth 50. I think maybe some of these other ones maybe should be down lower. But Apple, I think, has a stream of income that looks like it's theirs for a while, doesn't it?
Well, but that's always, you know, it's kind of funny, because the problem with tectonic shifts in the business world is that most people do not see them coming.
Oh, right.
All right. Before they hit. Otherwise, they would have been prepared to advance for it, right?
Well, and most people don't look at their house.
No, I'm talking about the people running the firms, Chief. I'm not talking about the guy.
You don't even have to go kind of there. I'm saying if somebody bought a house 15 years ago for 180 and it's trading 410, they think they're a genius.
Yeah.
You're not going to talk them out of it. You're not going to say, well, gee, you know, if you had to rent the place tomorrow or something, maybe it's really only worth 300. You look at you like you have four heads. What do you mean? It's worth 410.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, I just have... I have a lot of things that I look at in the current, you know, the current marketplace, if you will, and the space that we're in today, and I can't find places where I want to be. All right, which is a problem. All right, so I mean, I look at the panoply of stocks. I run screens, you know, because obviously I'm not going to look at all 500 of the S&P 500 one at a time, right? So I have a computer filter them for me and sort it. Duh, that's what everybody does these days.
By the way, what you're saying, what if you did that for a living? What if somebody lobbed you $5 million today and say, I want to be all in? I'd say, hey, how about my brother Dan goes to the Treasury on Monday and we get something 30 days for half of it while we sneak into this slowly,
my thing would be, how about if 50% of it sits and makes four in short-term bills for the...
That's exactly what I said, and, you know,
yeah.
And if we're going to pick an index, let's maybe pick one that hasn't raced up like a scalded dog, and let's make sure we're protected or something, but that's just me, I mean...
But you know what, but I wouldn't get the account, because... The guy would say, "I'm only going to get 4% of half that money."
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Yeah, and by the way, the guy down the street says, "I'll get 20."
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. And my answer is, well, you know what? If you want to do that, thank you very much for considering me to be the person to do this. I hope it works out for you, and you know, I'll be polite about it. But my expectation is that. You know, there's a decent chance, way higher odds than I'd like, especially if the guy has gray hair like me and he's like kind of age, right?
Or if he's not working, then you really got a problem if he's retired.
Well, yeah. But this is where the consumer level contraction is going to come out of nowhere when this crack occurs, because it will occur. Right? Anybody that says that it's never going to happen because the Fed can prevent it and the government can—that's BS. I've heard that more times than I can count, and every single time somebody runs that crap, eventually they end up being wrong. And the problem, Chief, is nobody ever—you know—someone always sells the top. All right, just like someone always buys the bottom. There's always someone retrospectively that does it.
And they did it by accident.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
The problem is, for everyone who did sell the top, there's 5,000 people who didn't and are sitting there looking at a quarter of their money gone.
What do you, without going into some, you know, long thing about blockchain or kind of stuff that I don't understand, I was looking the other day at the total, who knows, but they, whoever the theys are, boy, am I qualifying myself enough here? It's somehow or another, we're pushing $2 trillion, and I'll use the term wealth, in the cryptos.
Right.
I think it's big enough at that level. If it was a couple hundred billion, you know, it would be a problem. if a bomb goes off there, not literally, if a bomb goes off there, I think that's enough money now. I think there's enough leverage in that area. There didn't used to be. But now I think there's a lot of leverage in there. That could be an area that we're not really looking at. That could be I'm not predicting anything, but I'm saying if there was a something were to go wrong over there, maybe in the software, maybe someplace, everybody says it's totally impossible, but maybe it did, there's enough leverage there to cause a problem. I think it'd be a, it would be a big problem. What do you think? I think that
would set it off.
And totally. I mean, probably not even a 1% chance of there being a, you know, not the price, but I'm saying in terms of that there'd be a system problem. Just a lot
I think that, look, there's several places. So I have been maintaining for quite a while that when you look at the actual data on this whole AI thing and the data center, data center construction is being driven by it and all, because there's all these downstream effects of this ramp job that people are ignoring, which is really unwise. It's extremely unwise to ignore those downstream effects, but they are. And they say, that's not a big deal. This is not a big deal. That one's not a big deal. Whatever. You take a look.
Well, it's never a big deal until it is, right?
Well, except it is as the exponential, the vertical move continues before the cracking point is hit. The damage that's going to be done to municipalities, and you're starting to see people in some of these smaller areas. There's I think it's Menominee in Wisconsin.
Great little town, by the way. I've been in there.
I've been there. Okay. But apparently their city council got a proposal to put a data center in. They didn't disclose who the actual company is that's building it, but all they say is it's one of the big tech firms, but they didn't say who it is. The local people have said, over our dead bodies, because number one, the power demand is going to jack their cost of electricity, all right? Because the generation capacity in that area doesn't exist, so it's going to have to be bought. That's going to tamper with the grid balance in that area, which is going to drive up price. Duh. And on top of that, the water requirement, because of the way these frankly, the whole water thing with the cooling in those places is a matter of them being pigs and local authorities allowing them to get away with something they shouldn't. They should have to use closed loop systems, but those are less efficient. Therefore, they want open loop. They want to use evaporative cooling. That uses enormous amounts of water. And so there's a problem there, potentially, all right? But the people are starting to stand up and say, absolutely not. And, we've got...
Plus, I'm sure they want every tax benefit on Earth.
Oh, of course. Yeah. How'd that work out for the folks in Wisconsin, the other lower part of Wisconsin with Foxconn, right? We're gonna have all these jobs and all this and that and the other thing. And then the other thing that always gets me with this is, you say, well, you're going to have all this employment in the local area while they build this thing. Well, that may very well be true. I mean, putting up steel... You got to have dudes, right?
they always run that one out there. It's let's build a place we don't need because we're going to hire people to do it. Well, duh.
Well, but then the problem is.
By the way, you're not your favorite buddy Pritzker. You already told the Bears yesterday.
Oh God, here we go.
We'll help you with Arlington Park as soon as you pay off Soldier Field.
Oh yeah, okay. Well, all right. You mean he actually said something intelligent?
Yeah,
that I could actually support.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
So, the thing that I think is interesting and is, I believe, is going to be a problem with this and is going to provoke the collapse ultimately. We were talking earlier in the week about the thing with the TVA down here. Really not TVA, but ORNL, and putting up that reprocessing facility, all right, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a really good thing. And by the way, it's being privately funded. The government's not paying for it, which is even better because you got people that are putting their own capital to work here.
Now, who's going to pay for all the specialized containers and railroad cars and all that stuff?
Oh, the nuclear facilities that want to transport the stuff and then get the fuel. Well, believe me, this is a profitable enterprise.
All right, so I never understood. Maybe one day when we got a little more time, if you seem to know a lot about this stuff. I've always been wondering why the youngest nuclear facility here is the one that's been closed for 30 years, Ned Zion.
Right.
And I don't know what they did. They screw up when they designed the place. It's another day's story. But what's going to motivate them to take the stuff they've got in their pool up there when they're not using the place and send it somewhere just to get it out of there? And who's going to pay for that?
Oh, no, because they'll get paid for it. There's recoverable and
so somebody would buy that from those people.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I know, that's why I asked.
Then somewhere for it to go, yeah.
Oh, so yeah, in other words, they could the guys down in one Southwest, or is it Dresden or wherever it is? In other words, those guys could buy the stuff in Zion, say, get it down to Oak Ridge, and then get it back up here, and we'll use it.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh yeah, no, I mean the entire.
They all use the same stuff. I mean, they're not all different. They're not
well.
Different.
So, yes and no. You have to do the calculations on it. But in the general sense, the current water moderated reactor designs that are used for generating power in the United States can all run what's called mixed oxide fuel (MOX), which is that stuff. Okay. So that the fissile component has both uranium and plutonium in it, and then of course the way you get the plutonium is by irradiating the uranium.
If you were going to be somebody who thinks there's a future, you know, in this stuff, and if it was your kid or my kid, what would we ask them to study at Notre Dame or Purdue or someplace? What engineering do you study?
Nuclear physics and nuclear systems.
So it's not really, you're not, and then what you take physics, but then you also take some kind of engineering, metal,
yeah,
mechanical
it's
or whatever?
It's a fairly specialized engineering discipline.
Who even teaches it? Anybody anymore?
There's programs where, I mean, the cheap and easy way to get it is to go into the military and go through their nuke program. Of course, you have to qualify.
Wait a minute, then you turn out like hell.
Well, then you turn out like hell, or you turn out like Jimmy Carter.
Well, hell was on a cruiser, nuclear cruiser.
That's how Jimmy Carter got his knowledge.
That's right. Yeah. But he was never on a. I won't say lucked out, but he never wanted to be on a submarine, and he hated the idea of an aircraft carrier, and they just happened to have those cruisers that now are all retired.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's obviously, you know, you're talking long life cycle stuff though when you're talking about nuclear plants, because you know you put one up and it makes power for 40
years.
Well,
they didn't the cruisers, they all retired at 20 years. They never refueled them. They're supposed to refuel them in 20 years, and they said screw it, we're going to scrap them. I wonder why.
It's just an economics thing. Part of the problem with those is that because it's a naval ship, space is of course at a very serious premium, right?
Yeah.
So
we're gonna launch in something like an ass and say, "Well, that's because the companies and the admirals always want new stuff."
Well, there's a lot of screwball things that go on when it comes to military procurement that don't have anything to do with common sense, right? I mean, we all know that. But some of it is also original design. How much of the ship do you got to cut up to get the thing out of there? I mean,
yeah.
There's, you know, yeah. It's a non-trivial exercise.
I shocked poor Lou one day when I said, you know, when these guys run all these drones around, I almost want to put my uncle back in his P-47 with 5 machine guns shooting them down rather than missiles.
Right.
And he said, what are you talking about? I said, looks to me like it's a primitive weapon would do work better against these things than anything else. Knock them out one at a time. They're not shooting back.
Yeah, it's, you know, this
and
is...
It's naive on my part, but a million-dollar missile taken down a $10,000 drone is not the fair trade, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's this is going to be, I think the overextension and correction that's going to come out of this, I think to a large degree, what you're going to see happen next week is the Fed's going to, going to follow the IRX like they always do, simply because if they don't, they get buried, and they're not going to like that idea, right? So they're going to do what they usually do. That does not surprise. But the inflationary spike that's baked in the cake, and I was talking with somebody last night about this, and I said, look, if the Fed was to take 50 basis points off the curve, over the next 12 to 18 months, you could see a 2% increase in the CPI. And the first part of that...
2% more than now.
Correct.
Now, and I would say... If I was on national TV, the only CPI one in the world. Right, I think you'd be talking about a 7% 30-year rate.
Well, yeah, but Chief, the CPI right now is at 2.9. Okay. You're talking about a 5%.
All right, don't be like one of these new guys. Since when do we all talk in this yearly rate?
Chief, I'm not. Listen, all I'm saying. Look, we all know the CPI is BS. All right, I mean, I smoked a pork butt that was 99 cents a pound, and today they're selling for $2.50. So, the idea that pork is actually down in price is
we got a dash, but I'm zeroing in on one of my pet peeves. You know, the big lie is now it's 2.9. No, it isn't. It's 0.4 times 12.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is about 5.
And,
right?
and if anybody said that on national TV, we'd never be invited back.
Well, and oh, by the way, 2% on that would be 7.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that is a very real possibility. And if you want to know what sets it off, and here's the thing, what Powell should do, but he won't, is ask for a meeting with the leadership of Congress, both houses of Congress, and tell them, look, here's the bottom line. I'm taking system liquidity out of the market until the IRX trades at the 12-month fiscal deficit plus 50 basis points.
They wouldn't know what he was talking about.
Well, when the rates start to go up and they're saying, well, what is the current fiscal deficit? Well, 7% of GDP. So you're talking
about...
Pull up rates to 7.5?
Because we have people getting shot, I've been trying to be nice on the politicians, but the place is being run by a guy who owns resorts. What's good for him is not necessarily good for us.
Chief, the place is being run by the 535 guys who actually pass every single revenue.
Those guys, they are useless as breasts on a bull right now to Congress.
Well, you know what? They're the ones that actually buy the Constitution. If they did not pass his big bag of barf, we wouldn't be sitting here. But they did, and so there you are.
Well, I think we're talking a year from now. Somebody's getting a tax increase, and boy, that'd be a bad day.
I think you're talking a year from now. All those people that have all those nice things in their accounts, you might have to take a zero off one of them.
not on my watch. We'll have enough protection to do something. We won't protect it all. But have a nice weekend, buddy. Talk at you next week, as usual. SP Futures down a buck. NASDAQ Futures up 26. Slow morning. Back on Monday. Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.